You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Martial sport versus martial combat arts. At my martial arts academy, I offer classes in 7 different martial disciplines. 3 are sport-based: Muay Thai, mixed martial arts, and fencing. 3 are combat-based: Junfan Kung Fu, more popularly known as Jeet Kune Do, Majapahit martial arts, and the Filipino martial arts. The 7th is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, in which students can pursue either a sport or self-defense path, or both. The argument over the relative values of these 2 paths has been going on for decades, if not centuries, in the martial arts world. Combat-based martial arts are ancient and varied. They operate on the very logical premise that real fighting has no rules, and thus refuse to be constrained by the concepts of illegal techniques or time limits. A student is thus prepared by his or her training for self-defense as a private citizen or law enforcement officer, or for lethal combat when serving in the military or as a government agent. Martial sports are also ancient and varied. Wrestling is practiced in one form or another in virtually every culture. Archery competition goes back as far as do written records. The Greeks practiced a form of mixed martial arts called pancration more than 2,700 years ago. Jousting was a martial sport, and at the same medieval tournaments where you saw jousting, you could also observe a sport called the melee, in which pitched battles were fought between groups of armored men, frequently using blunted weapons. Deaths were not unheard of in this sport, though they weren't usually encouraged. By incorporating rules, martial sports allow the student to train for and engage in competition with a living human opponent at a high level of intensity, while enjoying more safety than would be possible in real combat. Before discussing the relative values of these 2 paths, it's important to ask a question. What is it that you want from your martial arts training? Some people practice martial arts with self-defense as their main motivation. Others for the exercise. Others to develop discipline and focus, perhaps in an effort to substitute a good habit for a bad one, like drug or alcohol abuse. Some practice a martial art because they admire the culture from which the art arose and wish to feel closer to that culture and perhaps to help preserve it by practicing one of its martial arts. These are all fine reasons to train, and deciding what your own motivation or motivations are can help you decide whether training in combat-based martial arts, sports-based martial arts, or some of each is for you. Let's take sports first. In one important sense, martial arts is an athletic endeavor, and the driving force of competition in martial sports has borne fruit in many useful ways. I'm reminded of the fact, sad but true, that many of the most important technological advances in human history were made in pursuit of military dominance. Similarly, the desire to win in a soon-to-occur upcoming competition can, sadly, be a more powerful motivator towards harder and smarter training, especially for younger students, than preparing for a hypothetical future self-defense situation that may never happen at all. This may seem counterintuitive to some of you, but human motivation is at best only infrequently based on logical thought processes. Thus, martial sports frequently produce better athletes than combat-based systems. In another sense, all martial arts are at their root about self-defense. So combat-based systems eliminate the middleman and get down to the technology one really needs to survive. The lack of sport-imposed safety rules results in an experience that in some ways is more like real fighting. The practitioner of a combat-based style probably spends more of his or her time both in and out of training, thinking about various self-defense scenarios and how to deal with them, and perhaps even contemplating what blind spots that training only in a martial sport leaves in one's defenses when there are no rules to protect you. Please don't misunderstand me. I don't mean to imply here that the training at any one martial arts academy must always fall completely into one of these two categories. Most combat-based systems practice some form of free sparring, more so now than in the past. And some martial sports, judo for example, devote at least a bit of training time to self-defense. The real problems crop up when we descend into the very common human failing of self-deception. For example, I remember a discussion I once had with an instructor who insisted that his students must train only while wearing blue jeans and cowboy boots, and that sparring was not part of the training, because the techniques he taught were far too deadly for sparring. I feel that this man was deceiving himself about the completeness of the training he was giving his students. While I agree that it is wise to do some of your training in street clothes, and that certain techniques are too dangerous for sparring, to my mind it's a mistake to never figure a way to pit at least a portion of your skills against an opponent who is actively striving to prevent your success. It's a standard cliche for combat-based practitioners to make fun of the safety equipment used by sport-based martial athletes, impugning their toughness and maybe their manhood. When European fencing introduced blunt safety tips on training blades centuries ago, some fencing masters adopted the motto, "Toy swords make toy swordsmen." Another cliche from that period was the grizzled, one-eyed fencing master wearing an eye patch, deriding the cowards who practiced fencing while wearing safety masks. Sport-based martial athletes can be vulnerable to self-deception as well. While it would certainly be an unenviable task to engage in a street fight with a high-level judo player, or boxer, or engage in a knife fight with an Olympic fencer, a martial athlete who trains only for his or her sport can definitely have huge blind spots that would be problematic in a self-defense encounter, especially during the first few years of his or her training. Guru Dan Inosanto, who is my primary instructor in the Filipino martial arts, tells a story about Jack Santos, who was one of his instructors, regarding Guru Jack's tenure as a bouncer in a California drinking establishment frequented by members of the Filipino-American community. Guru Santos was a World War II combat veteran and had a career in law enforcement. At the time of this story, there were a number of Filipino-American boxers with good ring records who were popular in the community. Some of them, however, liked to take an occasional drink. On more than one occasion as a bouncer, Guru Santos found it necessary to deal with an unruly professional boxer who had had too much to drink and had worn out his welcome. On one particular occasion, he rendered the inebriated pugilist unconscious with an open-handed slap. Guru Santos had massive slabs of bone and meat for hands, even for a small man, products of wielding weapons for decades. On the other hand, I've heard more than one story about a high school wrestler who got the best of a karate black belt in a street fight. When I speak of self-deception, I'm touching on a common and abiding failing of the human brain. Self-deception can manifest as what is called cognitive dissonance. This is a phenomenon in which a person holds two contradictory and competing beliefs or ideas at the same time. Your brain will try to reconcile these two competing concepts, frequently by using compartmentalization, which is to keep each concept sealed away in its own part of your brain, never contemplating both of them at the same time. Or your brain will engage in rationalization. An example might involve an individual who has achieved an advanced rank in a martial arts system and who then discovers that there was an area of self-defense for which his training has not adequately prepared him. Some high-ranking martial artists who find themselves in this position experience cognitive dissonance when they cannot reconcile their high status within their respective art with their feelings of fear and inadequacy. Am I or am I not a competent fighter? Was all my training for nothing? This kind of emotional response, while normal, is an overreaction. If a boat has a leak, fix the leak. Don't throw away the boat. My response to such feelings is to happily don a white belt, either literally or figuratively, and begin training in the system that helps me shore up the holes in my game. When this form of cognitive dissonance strikes, however, the response of many martial artists is to bury their head in the sand and ignore the problem, while clinging to their imagined status as a martial arts prodigy like a security blanket. Most such problems occur when the martial artist allows his or her sense of identity to become tied to a single martial art. In my mind, the resolution of the combat martial arts versus sport martial arts debate is simple. If you have the time, opportunity, and resources, you should try to do both. If not, doing either alone is far better than sitting on your ass and doing nothing. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.